You might think Grammarly is a fancy spell check, but your team has been using and loving it for years because it does way more than you realize. Grammarly's AI can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Out into the cool of the evening strolls the pretender. He knows that all his hopes and dreams begin and end there.
What if I were to tell you that many of the active mutual funds you own are really expensive passive vehicles? It's a problem called closet indexing, and it's when supposedly active funds own hundreds and hundreds of names, making them look and perform like big indexes, minus the low fees. None other than legendary stock picker Bill Miller has said, closet indexers are killing active investing. That's from the guy who beat the S&P 500 index 15 years in a row. I'm Barry Ritholtz, and on today's edition of At the Money, we're going to discuss how you can avoid the scourge of overpriced closet indexers. To help us unpack all of this and what it means for your portfolio, let's bring in Andrew Slemon. He is the Managing Director at Morgan Stanley Investment Management, where he leads the Applied Equity Advisors team and serves as a Senior Portfolio Manager for all long equity strategies. His team manages over $8 billion in client assets. Simmons' concentrated U.S. portfolios have done well against the indices, and his global portfolio has trounced its benchmarks. Let's start with the basics. What are the dangers of closet indexing?
I think that the dangers is just what Bill Miller said, which is it's giving the mutual fund business a bad name. And the reason for that is that if you are charging active fees, so inherently you're charging a fee to manage a fund, but you really don't differentiate from the index, then you can't drive enough active performance to make up for the fees differential. And that's why I think so many, you know, the results is portfolio managers or money managers, mutual fund managers don't outperform over time. Well, it's because they don't drive enough differential to the index to justify the fee. So in my opinion, hey, good. It's good for the industry. It is forcing managers to either get out of the business, investors to move to indexing, or what's going to be left is managers that are truly active that can justify charging a fee above a, you know, kind of index fee.
How do we get to the point where so many active managers have become little more than high-priced closet indexers? How did this happen?
Well, it's the business, Barry, which is if you run a very, very active fund, which over time has proven to generate excess return, because at the end of the day, if you're very active, it's going to quickly become apparent whether you're good or not. So if you last in the business as an active manager, you must be pretty good. You end up with a performance differential on a month to month basis. Some months you might be up 1%, the market's down 1%. Some months you might be down 1%, the market's up 1%. Over time, higher active share works, but clients tend to get on the scale on a very short-term basis. So if you slowly bleed under performance, you're less likely to have clients pull money at the wrong time versus a higher active share manager might go through a period of underperformance and becomes more apparent on an immediate basis that they're underperformed. So there's kind of a business incentive to stick close to the index to keep the money in the fund.
So you're just essentially describing career risk, that this is a issue of job preservation for a lot of active managers.
There is statistical proof, academic proof, Barry, that the more active you are in your fund, so you differ from the fund, the bigger the spread between how your fund does and how the average investor in the fund does. And I'm going to give you a perfect example of what I mean. The decade of 2000 to 2009, the number one performing mutual fund, domestic fund, was a company called the CGM Focus Fund. It generated an 18% annualized return. Phenomenal. The average investor in the fund during that time generated a negative 11% annualized return.
Wow.
Let me repeat that. The fund generated 18% annualized return. The average investor generated negative 11. The reason, which, you know, when you think about it, seems obvious, is, well, the manager, he was never up 18%. He was up a lot 1 year, and then money would flow in. And then he was down the next year a lot, and money would flow out. So investors weren't capturing the best time to invest with the manager, which was after a bad year. And they were only chasing after good years. So the point of this is that the further you go out on the spectrum of active, the more your flows become volatile. And so, again, it's just there's plenty of academic proof that says closet indexing leads to less flow volatility.
So you keep mentioning active share. Define what active share is, and how do we measure it?
If you think about my global concentrator, the MSCI World is the benchmark. It has roughly 1,600 stocks. Global concentrator has 20 stocks. So it doesn't own 1,580 stocks that are in the index. It is therefore a very, very active fund. So active share measures how much you differ from the index. If my benchmark is the S&P 500 and I own 400 of the 500, which we don't, you're not very active. So it is proven over time, again, that active share is a definitional term, that higher active share managers outperform over time, because, again, you're going to find out pretty quickly whether they're good or not, because they don't kind of benchmark hug. So it's a very good measure of how a manager differs. The however, which is very important, is, let's say my index is MSCI World. What happens if I didn't own any of those stocks, but I went out and bought bonds, and copper futures, I'm making it up? Well, I would also have very high active share, because those instruments that I put into my fund weren't actually in the index. And so what you really want to measure is something called tracking error. And I apologize getting wonky, but you don't want to have a manager that has high active share because he's making big kind of bets that have nothing to do with what he's benchmarked or she's benchmarked against. So tracking error is a measure of how volatile your portfolio is relative to the index. So again, if I own, say, copper and bond futures and currencies, I might go up and down, but the days I went up and down probably wouldn't be consistent with the days the market went up and down. And so I would have what's called high tracking error. So what you really want to have in this business is higher active share, but not a lot of tracking error. I'm not making a big directional bet against my benchmark. I just don't own a lot of the benchmark.
So it sounds like if you look too much like the index, you'll never be able to outperform it, because you'll just get what the index gives you. High active share makes you different enough from the index to potentially outperform. And as long as you steer clear of tracking error, you're not going to be so different that it no longer relates to that particular index or benchmark.
That's exactly right. And one of the dangers that I have seen and observed and studied before I started funds concentrated funds is what has happened in the past is, say you have a manager that has a more diversified fund and he or she has done great. And then the firm comes and says, hey, you know what? You've done so great. Let's take your best ideas and put it into a concentrated fund. The problem is a lot of times those best ideas are highly correlated. And so if that best idea, whatever it is, works really well, they do well. But if that best idea doesn't work, then the fund, you know, more or less implodes. So this is why I think it's really important if you run concentrated portfolios, focusing on what is the correlation of the stocks in the portfolio are supremely, supremely important. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. We own, you know, in our global concentrated, we own NVIDIA, which has done great. Everyone knows about it. It's a big position. But another big position in our portfolio is CRH, which is a cement company, equally as large. What does AI have to do with cement? Not much. A third largest position is Ameriprise, which is an asset management firm. So you have a tech company, you have a basic materials company, and you have a finance company. That are all very large positions, but they probably don't all move together given the diversity of those stocks. So I think it's high active share means a limited number of positions, but making sure they don't all zig and zag together, because what I've seen is concentrated managers that blow up. It's because they had a great idea and it worked for a while and then it didn't work and all their stocks, you know, were correlated to that idea.
So we keep coming back to volatility and drawdowns. For the people who are engaging in closet indexing, how much of that strategy is to avoid the volatility, to avoid the drawdowns, and in exchange, they're giving up performance?
Absolutely. The point that I was trying to drive with that story of the fund in the 90s is, by the very nature that that manager had such a difference between how the fund did and how the investor did, it implied that there were huge swings in flows. You did well, money came pouring in. He did badly, money went pouring out. That's the only way you have such a differential. So closet indexing, the flows actually are... they're not as extreme. And so it's easier to manage a fund that has less extreme flows. It's better for the, in many ways, it's better for the, you know, the fund management company, but it's perverse to what drives performance over time. I like to say Warren Buffett doesn't own 400 stocks. So why are 300 stocks? So why do these funds drive, have so many stocks? It's because I think it's easier to manage kind of the client expectation.
So let's talk a little bit about transparency. Your global portfolio is 20 stocks. Your concentrated U.S. is 30 stocks. Pretty transparent. Your investors know exactly what you own. Seems like the closet indexers are not quite as transparent. People think they're getting an active fund, but what they're really getting is something that looks and acts just like the index.
Yeah, so I've given you the kind of the academic reason why the benefits of concentrated portfolios, which is called active share, higher active share, managers outperform over time, lower active share. But then there's a practical reason, Barry, which I know that, you know, we've talked about in the past and you'll get a chuckle out of this, but it's my, you know, I started my career at Morgan Stanley as an advisor in the 90s. And what I observed was that, you know, everyone wants to think they add low, as Lizanne Sano said last on your podcast. I loved it. You know, add low, reduce high. But actually, what, because of the desire for preservation of wealth, what really happens is, you know, some geopolitical event happens around the world and the market goes down, and then people want to sell or reduce their exposure to the market. And what I observed over time was that investors that held stocks were less likely to sell at the wrong time than when people just held the market. So, you know, whenever someone called up and said, oh my God, you know, something bad's happened 4,000 miles away, if I could move the conversation to, well, I know you want to sell the market, but your biggest position is Apple. Whoa, I love Apple. Let's not sell that, right? Getting the conversation to stocks kept people invested. And the most important thing to do is to ride out the downturn. So again, what I thought was, hey, if I could start these funds that had just a few stocks so people could actually see their positions on a page or a page and a half, you know, they're more likely to stick with it. So there was the kind of the academic reason, and then there was the practical reason, which is people stick with stocks over time, less so than the market.
So to wrap up, investors who want some of their assets in active management should avoid those managers that ape the indexes but charge high fees. That gives you the worst of both worlds, passive investing but high cost. Instead, you should remember that a huge part of passive success are low fees, low turnovers, and low taxes. If you're going to go active, well then, go active, own a concentrated portfolio with some high active share so you have a chance to outperform the index. I'm Barry Ritholtz, and this is Bloomberg's At the Money. What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT-approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.